From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. And I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Coming up, before summer winds down, let's get up into the Catskills and see some cool stuff. Like the 37th annual Ellenville Wawarsing Chamber of Commerce Blueberry Festival. It happened on Saturday. We had a reporter on the scene. Radio Catskills' Olivia Sipple brings us the best of Blueberry Fest. We'll also join Olivia as she visits Burn Bray Mansion, a historic mansion in Glen Spey that's drawing visitors for more than its ornate rooms and mountain setting. We'll see those sites after sifting through some serious news, including an investigative report that finds, even after a landmark settlement with New York's Attorney General, the level of care has actually declined at a notorious major nursing home chain with dozens of locations in the state. I'll talk with Sam Mellon's New York Focus senior reporter in a moment. First, we have news from the Catskills. The source of clean drinking water for millions of downstate residents, thanks to six upstate reservoirs located west of the Hudson, one of those reservoirs may be getting bigger. A new study could revive a decades-old proposal to enlarge Cannonsville Reservoir in Delaware County. New York City Department of Environmental Protection, DEP, officials told the Upper Delaware Council last week that the city is preparing to study whether Cannonsville Reservoir could be expanded to increase water storage and help mitigate future droughts. This study is one of four options advanced from a 2023 Delaware River Basin Commission, DRBC, study that examined thousands of potential ways to increase water storage in the basin. Officials say it will examine facilities, land ownership, operations, geology, and structural issues, as well as environmental restrictions, permitting, and costs. It will also consider whether the potential effects on wetlands and upstream areas, impacts to roads and bridges, financial effects on ratepayers, and the cost-benefit of the project. The proposal has a long history. A 1982 good faith agreement included a recommendation that New York enlarge Cannonsville Reservoir if feasibility environmental studies determined the project was practical. A state study completed in the mid-80s found that it was feasible technically, but cited financial and environmental challenges. This new study comes as New York City continues planning for major repairs of the Delaware Aqueduct, which carries about half of the city's drinking water. The city shut down the Delaware Aqueduct in 2024 to complete decades-long repairs, but that effort was halted after sudden drought conditions developed. The drought highlighted the need for additional planning. This Cannonsville study is pending in an intergovernmental agreement between the DEP and the DRBC. It could begin in late 2026 or early 2027. Now we have an update on New York's gubernatorial race from Long Island, where President Trump is expecting to appear with Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman on Friday afternoon. As WNYC's Jimmy Vielkon reports, the visit comes as Blakeman campaigns against Governor Kathy Hochul.
Blakeman says in a statement that he's, quote, grateful that Trump is going to tour the county's law enforcement facilities. Blakeman often touts his friendship with the president, including during a recent campaign stop in Albany.
I have philosophical differences with President Trump on some things, and some things I don't. In most things, I think that we are completely allied together on the important things.
The Democratic governor's campaign says Blakeman is a, quote, MAGA fanboy, and says Hochul is pushing back on Trump-backed cuts to federal health care spending. Polls show most New York voters have an unfavorable view of the president. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
Thank you to the New York Public News Network for that report. Well, across two different articles in the past 2 weeks, New York Focus senior reporter Sam Mellons has published the results of his investigation into Centers Healthcare, a company that owns dozens of nursing homes in New York State and one that Mellons calls notorious. He's got four major findings from his report on how this nursing home owner is continuing to fall short despite fines and even a major settlement with the state attorney general. For more, I spoke with Sam Mellons earlier this afternoon. Sam Mellons, welcome back to Radio Catskill.
Hello, Jason. Good to talk with you.
So before we start talking about what your investigation found, can you tell me, like, who you were investigating and why? And can you give me some background here?
Yes. So I was investigating the nursing home chain Centers Healthcare, which has several dozen nursing homes under its control across the state, and also the New York Attorney General's office. And where I started from was that in 2024, after the Attorney General sued Centers Healthcare for financial fraud and patient abuse and neglect, allegations of both, they reached a settlement where Centers agreed to accept independent monitors of its finances and its health care and to make improvements in patient care at four nursing homes that the Attorney General had specifically targeted. So my investigation was a follow-up on that and looking into in what ways they improved and in what ways they were still falling short.
You know, in one of your headlines, you refer to this nursing home chain as notorious. So does this chain, like, have a reputation? Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, I think this chain is known for poor conditions and for treating people poorly in many cases in many of its homes. They've been sued in multiple states, not only in New York, where, you know, several of their homes have been sued, but also in New Jersey. There's an ongoing lawsuit in New Jersey alleging $124 million of misappropriated funds, along with serious abuse and maltreatment of patients. So I think they have a reputation that precedes them.
All right. So let's get into to what you found. And one of the first things is that this settlement with the AG's office was supposed to fix understaffing and poor conditions at four nursing homes in particular that you're looking at. But that hasn't been the case, at least not with one of them, right?
Yeah. So three of the homes targeted in this lawsuit have actually seen pretty significant improvements. I mean, they're, you know, it's not exactly the four seasons, but things seem to not be as bad as they were. But one in Buffalo, the Buffalo Center for Rehabilitation and Nursing, still has really terrible incidents being reported in inspection reports. We're talking about unsupervised falls, fly infestations, verbal abuse from nursing home staff, non-consensual photography of exposed nursing home residents. And this home has also repeatedly missed a staffing target. One of the requirements of the settlement was that the homes had to provide 3.5 hours of nursing care per resident per day, which is still significantly below the recommended federal minimum for high-quality care. But this home in Buffalo has missed that at least 82 times since the settlement in November 2024.
Wow. And does that mean that the other three facilities you're looking at in that group of four, that they were able to bring their staffing up?
Yes, it does. They didn't all hit it 100% of the time. There were some occasional misses, but by and large, the other three were complying with that 3.5-hour requirement.
Okay, and what about the level of care at, you know, other centers and healthcare nursing homes since this settlement?
This was one of our other findings. So the lawsuit targeted four homes in particular, but the chain, like I mentioned, has several dozen homes across the state. And one of the provisions of the lawsuit was that the cost of boosting staffing at those four homes could not cause reductions in staffing at their remaining homes in the chain to save money on that end. But what we found is that at several other homes in the chain in New York State, staffing levels, you know, nurses and nurse assistants have indeed fallen since the settlement, sometimes to dangerously low levels.
Okay. And apart from you, who is looking at this to, you know, make sure that there is compliance and improvement?
So the Attorney General appointed an independent financial monitor and an independent health monitor when they reached settlement in late 2024. The independent financial monitor's term is still ongoing. They're still exercising oversight. The independent health monitor's term actually expired at the end of last month, and they either have produced or are soon to produce a final report on their oversight that I am hoping to get a copy of and report on further.
Okay, and another one of your findings is that that Centers Healthcare has faced fines, but you're saying that the fines aren't doing much.
Right. So the number that we found was $340,000 is the total of the fines that they've faced since the settlement. But this single home in Buffalo that we were talking about in 2023, which is the most recent year that's available, had a net income of, I think it was around $5 million. So, you know, multiply that across dozens of homes in the chain, and $340,000 is pretty insignificant and seems unlikely to cause any real reevaluation or change of course.
That's interesting. Do you think that fines like that, fines of that caliber, like, would have more effect for a smaller chain, for something that wasn't a big multi-state chain?
I think that's possible, yeah. If you have an independent home and you hit them with significant fines that could really eat into their profits, because these are often very profitable institutions, my instinct is that could potentially produce a chain. But when you can sort of amortize that across dozens of facilities, I think it probably doesn't make very much difference.
And then your final finding is, you know, really about the logical conclusion of all this. Like, I want to ask about, okay, well, so now what's the AG's office doing? But your finding is that it's not really clear what the next actions would be from New York's attorney general, if any.
Right. Like I mentioned, the term of the independent health monitor is now over, and I'm very interested to see that final report to see whether it has recommendations for subsequent action or a subsequent plan for improvement. And, yeah, what will be done to address the continuing poor conditions in this chain is an open question, I think.
Your first reporting on this story came out almost 2 weeks ago, and you followed up with another story near the end of last week. In that time, have you gotten any response from the AG's office or from lawmakers or other officials about this reporting?
Not so much. I've had a few. Most of the response I've gotten has been from sort of concerned individuals. I had someone email me today and say, my husband is in one of those facilities, and that was mentioned in my article, and I'm not in the state. What can I do to make sure that he's being treated decently? So I think people are certainly concerned whether or not the governmental bodies are taking action.
And again, you're specifically investigating Centers Healthcare, this particular chain. But is what you're finding here as you're doing this investigating, does it have any relevance to other nursing homes? Are there lessons to be learned here? Does it say anything about the bigger picture of this type of care in New York State?
Well, I think the question it really raises that I'm not sure there's a good answer to right now is, what does it take to compel a poor nursing home to improve the way it treats its residents, who are very vulnerable elderly people? And I think even a very diligent, very concerted effort from the state's chief law enforcer can fall short. So that leaves us with a big question mark, frankly, about how we protect these vulnerable people.
Talking to Sam Mellon, senior reporter at New York Focus. These articles are up now at nysfocus.com. Sam, as always, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you, Jason.
We've got more news on the way, including a tour of Burn Bray Mansion, and also we'll check out the Ellenville Blueberry Festival. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
I'm Jason Dole, letting you know it's time for Putt-Putt for Public Radio. Mini-golf in the Catskills, 5 to 7 Friday at Putt-Putt Van Winkle, County Route 6, Bovina Center. We'll have drinks, snacks, everything you need to play, all for $15, all to support Radio Catskill. We did this last year, everyone had a blast, and you have to see this Rip Van Winkle-themed mini-golf course. It's Putt-Putt for Public Radio, Friday evening in Bovina Center.
One paper from last year showed that 14 different types of cancer were increasing in the early onset age group, and that includes some common ones like breast and colorectal cancer, as well as uterine cancer, testicular cancer, pancreatic cancer, and several others.
I'm Rachel Abrams. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
It is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. A historic mansion in Glens Bay is drawing visitors for more than its ornate rooms and mountain setting. At Burn Bray Mansion, owners and guests say unexplained experiences have become part of the house's story. Radio Catskill's Olivia Sipple takes us inside and speaks with the owners of the property to learn more about what makes it so unique.
In Glens Bay, three mansions line High Road. At the end of one long driveway sits Burn Bray Mansion, where visitors come for its history, its architecture, and some say its paranormal activity. Today, we'll explore the mansion's past, the strange experiences people have reported, and some of the house's most active spaces. First, meet one of the owners and my tour guide for the day.
I'm Andy Russ. I am one of the proprietors of Burn Bray Mansion, and that's where we are, Burn Bray Mansion.
Burn Bray Mansion is known in Sullivan County as both a bed and breakfast and a destination for paranormal investigators.
If you don't do or don't know, it's a haunted bed and breakfast, and Huffington Post has voted it one of the most haunted bed and breakfast, or hotel they called it, in the country. It's people come from all around, really, mainly just to investigate and to spend a night with some spirits or things that go bump in the night. But it's also just on top of that, just a beautiful place to stay. So a lot of travelers just come to stay in a beautiful bed and breakfast. When I say bed and breakfast, it includes breakfast and it includes a fabulous home-cooked dinner by Mike Frazee, the owner of the mansion.
Guests can rent individual rooms among the mansion's 12 bedrooms or reserve the entire house. To understand the property's reputation, it helps to start with its history. Co-owner Mike Frazee says the mansion was built for the daughter of George Ross Mackenzie, a Scottish immigrant who made his fortune with the Singer Sewing Company.
A guy by the name of George Ross Mackenzie. He came to the United States from Scotland in the mid-1800s. He started working for Singer Sewing Machine Company. He built the wooden cabinets for the sewing machines. And he eventually worked his way up to becoming control of the company, eventually owner of the company. And what he did was he started the assembly line for Singer. So he made Singer the richest corporation in the world at the time because everybody wanted a sewing machine.
Mackenzie brought the mountain in Glens Bay, Frazee says, because it reminded him of his native home in Scotland. After Mackenzie died, his family built several summer mansions on the property.
His wife was much younger than him, and he also left $3.5 million in cash. That was 1892. That was huge money. After he was gone, the family built eight mansions up here. The son's mansion was across the street. It was the biggest of them all. It had 45 rooms. This was the last one built. This was built for his daughter. And this one only had 27 rooms. But they were summer homes, so they only came up here in the summertime. And they used to go to a church down the bottom of the hill. Mackenzie decided that was too far to travel all the time. He built a church across the street, which the foundation is still up there. And they had a minister that used to come up in the summertime when they were here, who eventually died in this house, by the way.
Throughout the tour, Russ and Frazee told the stories of those who they said passed on in the house and the spirits they believe may remain. Before restoring Burn Bray as a bed and breakfast, Frazee planned to use the property as an Olympic cycling center. He said athletes would train in the basement while lectures would be held upstairs or on the first floor trophy room. But Frazee says strange experiences began long before he and Russ took over the property. The mansion at the time was owned by a couple. Frazee says the wife felt unwelcome in the house.
His son told me this, that his wife, no, it's the son's mother, said that this house hated her. Hated her. The son told me that his mother would go in, they're going to roast, whatever, it's a holiday, whatever it's going to be. She put it in the oven, turkey, chicken, and when she went back to base or something, the oven's off. She put it on, she go back, the oven's off. To keep the oven on, she'd have to have one of the kids put the oven on. She would go downstairs in the basement to do doing the laundry. She'd go down, it was time to go into the dryer, it had gone off. She'd go down there, the water had been turned off. So she said this house hated her.
Frazee says he also heard accounts of sightings and unexplained nighttime sounds, including reports of babies crying when no children were present. One of the first areas where guests reported activity was a hallway upstairs towards the back of the house. Frazee originally used the mansion to house young cyclists during training sessions. Russ and Frazee believe house workers may have lived in this section of the mansion. They say the people who stayed here described the same type of encounters, even though they do not know one another.
Every time, people that didn't know each other for months on end would complain about noises. They couldn't sleep. They felt like somebody was watching them. They felt pressure on their chest. They heard their door open in the middle of the night. They woke up to the door slamming. They heard footsteps up and down this particular hallway right here that we're standing in. They would say to Mike, why are you pacing up and down at 3 o'clock in the morning? You know what I mean? We can't sleep. Blah, blah, blah. Many reports, and these are all from different people on different occasions, would come outside the door to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. They would turn and see somebody sitting on these steps right here. So these three steps that lead up to the bathroom, they would see somebody sitting here like this, their head down, just kind of rocking back and forth. So they quickly went back into their room and held it until the morning. So that happened all the time. Who was sitting on the steps? Who was walking up and down the hallway? Who tried to open my door in the middle of the night? I felt like somebody was watching me. All the same stories.
The hallway leads towards a back staircase that you could take downstairs to the kitchen. Russ says guests continue to report footsteps, doors opening, and other unexplained noises. Another active space, according to Russ, is the mansion's attic of curiosities. The room is usually locked unless visitors ask to see it.
And on the third floor is also the attic of curiosities, which we will visit, which is an attic which runs the length of the mansion. It's gigantic and is just full of collectibles and odd things, some that have been left here for years before we were here, some that have been collected when we were here, and it's just a variety of stuff that some people say are haunted objects in there too.
Russ says the attic has produced many reports of unexplained activity during the 33 years he and Frazee has owned the mansion.
This is what I call an attic full of junk. But one man's junk is another man's treasure, right? So it goes way back this way, a bunch of stuff there to the right, but mainly it comes this way. That is a lot of stories here, a lot of stories. This is where you hear kids playing, you hear balls bouncing, you hear laughing, you hear crying.
Russ says he's had his own experiences in the attic, though he tries to find logistical explanations before accepting a paranormal one.
I'll tell you a quick story about up here that I came up. We were doing some ghost hunters were down there doing a divining rod method. You know what that is? When you hold these rods in your hand and you ask the spirit to move them to questions. So one of them was in touch with Ellie or Elsie. We're not sure which one. There's two girls that apparently play up here. I called her Elsie, and that they were talking to you. Are you in the attic? Yes. How long have you been here? Blah, blah, all these questions, and they were dead on. Yes, no, yes, no. So I'm sitting around, and I'm overhearing this, and I call BS on it. I'm like, I always try to debunk everything, right? So I remember there were these Smurfs right there. These are little tiny things. So I said, that should be easier for her to move. So I said, there's Smurfs. There's something called Smurfs, and they're little blue characters on a shelf. Can you move one of those? And she says, yes. Great. Let us know when you move it. So we wait. And then, boom, we get the yes that she moved it. Then I'm thinking, how am I going to know? Like, she could have just turned it to the left or turned it to the right. I don't know exactly where they were positioned. And then I hear somebody in the back of the line say, there's a Smurf over here. And I'm like, So over here, there's army men. You see somebody knocked them over, but there's army men here. And amongst these army men was a Smurf. And there's no way there'd be a Smurf amongst the Army men, because the Smurfs are together with the Smurf family. It's a whole different family.
For Russ and Frazee, reports of paranormal activity are part of Burn Bray Mansion's identity. They say visitors do not have to believe in ghosts to stay here, but they may leave with their own story. To learn more about Burn Bray Mansion or arrange a visit, go to the mansion's website. In Glens Bay, I'm Olivia Sipple for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Olivia, for that report. And before we go, actually, let's check in with Olivia one more time, because she was actually at the 37th Annual Blueberry Festival, happened in Ellenville on Saturday. Let's go there now.
Sunny skies over Canal Street brought locals out for the 37th Annual Blueberry Festival, hosted by the Ellenville and Mawarsing Chamber of Commerce. Visitors spent the day browsing vendors, sampling food, and enjoying live music and blueberry-themed activities. One local nonprofit, Family of Ellenville, raised money at the festival. Tiffany Santiago, the organization's program director, said the event continues to grow.
The community, it's been expanding, actually. There's way more people every year here. So last year was a lot of people, and this year is a ton of people, too. I love seeing the new vendors.
Santiago said that she takes pride in decorating the organization's tent, which featured blueberry-themed items made by volunteers.
So we have homemade blueberry jam. So we are a program that runs off of volunteers. So all of our volunteers, you know, they help out making things. So we have blueberry pies, we have blueberry cookies, muffins, jam. One of my volunteers also crocheted little blueberries so you could take home. And everything is basically for fundraising here. So everything blueberry. I don't know if anybody else has any other ideas of what we could have at our tent. Usually people are so happy to see the tent. They're like, oh, we have blueberry things. You know, so we take pride in that here.
Other vendors sold blueberries, muffins, pies, and even blueberry-themed merchandise. Many attendees also wore blue outfits for the occasion. Vendor Ginger Morris of Ferndale brought soy and gel wax candles in blueberry-inspired designs.
I make fancy candles, and they're made mostly of soy wax and gel wax. And there's a huge variety of different things. I made blueberry candles. I have blueberry muffin, blueberry cheesecake, blueberry cobbler, blueberry pie, and an assortment of other candles like Oreo cookie.
Morris said the festival brings a large and supportive crowd for her business. She also sampled a blueberry treat from a local bakery.
I love them. Love them. I had a blueberry crumb cake from Blueberry Hill Bakery.
In the kids' zone, children competed in a blueberry donut eating contest. Participants ate donuts hanging from the strings while keeping their hands behind their backs. The festival also featured a blueberry muffin contest with categories for kids and adults, as well as an amateur-only division. Further down Canal Street, food vendors sold a wide range of options. Even though there was a short rainstorm glooming over for a few minutes, the sun shined brightly and the event concluded at 4 p.m. In Ellenville, I'm Olivia Sipple for Radio Catskill.
All right, big thanks once again to Olivia Sipple for that and all the good work you've been doing with us this summer. Thank you so much. That's it for the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. I'll be back with you again tomorrow evening. We'll do it again. Coming up at 7, we got Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. You want to stay with us for that? For now, we do have more news on the way from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Looking for things to do? Check out Radio Catskill's community calendar. Find out what's happening or submit your own event. The community calendar at wjffradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.